Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Our topic here in 2026 is the joy of collecting, and collecting football cards is a great entryway, as we talked in an earlier episode. Well, we have a gentleman with us today that is no stranger to the pig pen. He's been on here talking about football history with us quite a bit, and he is probably, I don't know anybody that's collected football cards longer, and that's Bob Swick of Gridiron Greats Magazine. Bob, welcome back to the pig pen.
Thanks for having me back on, Darren. Good to be back.
Yeah, Bob, like I alluded to, you know, you are probably the foremost expert from experience, because you probably had more cards go through your hand than most people have taking breaths, you know, I'm sure. So we'd love to hear some of your wisdom, some of your points of enjoyment of collecting cards, and some other tips that you can give a new collector.
Sure. I've been collecting, just to give my background, I've collected cards since 1965. I was 7 years old, and at that time, packs of cards were a whopping 5 cents each. So I would shoo around for a nickel or a dime from my parents or my aunt and uncle, and I would go when we were out. We lived in a relatively small town. The town next to us had three stores that sold baseball, football cards. One was a candy store. One was a little soda shop, which had magazines and so on and so forth. And then there was a store named McCrory's, which was a five and dime store, which had cards there also. So I bought my first cards, I still remember to this day, at the Branford candy shop. I bought a pack of 1965 Topps cards, and I bought a pack of 1965 Philadelphia cards. It was football season at the time, fall of 1965. And I bought a pack each. I got home and I opened the packs. I didn't know what was in them other than whatever these cards were. And I was just amazed to see that there were football players that I had watched on TV in color, meaning that they had color uniforms, they were printed in color, so on and so forth. And I just caught the bug there, and I started collecting. And as the years progressed, I got into becoming a very advanced football card collector. I collected many, many different sets over the years. And I have a basic complete run of cards, meaning complete sets, from 1948 to the last year Topps produced sets, which was 2015. So wow. I have the 1948 and 49 Leaf sets, the 1948 to 1955 Bowman football sets. I have the top sets from 1951 and then the 1955 All-American to 2015. I have the 1960 to 63 Fleer football sets, the 1964 to 67 Philadelphia sets, and then Fleer teams in action were produced 1976 to 1988. I have all those sets. So I have 92 sets in my collection.
Jeez. Hey, let's go back to what you said. You know, your first pack, you went down to the local candy shop, you bought that pack. Now, I have heard people describe it, and I tend to agree with them. When you buy those packs of cards, it's almost comparative to Christmas morning, your birthday, where a present is wrapped up. You don't know exactly what's in there. You have an idea that there's cards in there, but you don't know what's in there. And people, despite what some of the companies might think, they're not buying those packs for the gum that's in it. You know,
exactly.
So maybe you could share your experience with
that. Well, it was just so fascinating to buy a pack and not know what was inside of it. So when you opened it up, and again, I had no I had no real perception of what I was going to get other than a card. And I really saw, I was, this was, wow, I really want these cards. Because again, I grew up, you grew up to a certain degree in a black and white world. So our television was black and white. Newspapers were black and white. The only thing that was color was in magazines and the actual your everyday life. So if you actually went to a football game in person, you saw the color uniforms, the color of the game. So I think I was so fascinated with the color of the cards and seeing the players in their uniforms. And at the same time, I was fascinated on the back of the cards because I would read everything in the back of the card. They had a little one or two sentence write-up about the player. They had statistics, which I learned very quickly, the different statistics that were available on the back of the cards. That really helped me with math, and I think it provided an avenue for me to have enjoy math my entire lifetime, and numbers and so on and so forth. But the one thing that just to get a little off script, the one thing I didn't ever understood. That you could actually complete a set of these cards. I didn't realize that until the 1970s because I thought you just bought all these cards. I saw there were some checklist cards, but I actually checked the checklist to see what cards I had, but I didn't know that completed a set. I had no perception of that. So I fast forward to the early 70s, and a couple of friends at school were saying, "Did you have the set of this?" We're talking about baseball cards at the time. Do you have a set of them? I said, "Well, what's a set?" And then he explained, my buddy explained to me, well, there was whatever it was, 598 cards in the set. I said, I had no idea that there was a complete set. So I started going back to my football cards and I said, boy, I need a lot of cards for these sets. So I made in a little notebook, I made my own checklist, what numbers I was missing from it, and then try to put the sets together. But that came years later. As I had more disposable income, so on and so forth. But it was, yeah, I would say it would be like a Christmas present. You're opening up, you don't know what you get in it. And it was fun. It was just so fun. And I know I drove my parents and my aunt and uncle crazy asking for change. And they understood what I was doing. So I had an uncle, he would always open up his wallet. So I knew I was going to get a dollar bill. And I said, boy, I can buy a lot of packs with this type of thing. And, it just stayed with me my entire life. It was a great hobby, to say the least.
In my experience, I lived the sort of same kind of neighborhood that you did. We had, three stores right within walking distance when you're 10, 11 years old, that at least your parents trusted you to go to, and, without the getting kidnapped or whatever, bad things could happen. And I would get an allowance. One of my jobs was doing, because I had a brother too. I would have to take the bags of garbage out on Mondays or whenever our garbage day was in that neighborhood. I forget what it was, but you'd get a quarter for every bag of garbage that would go out. So I couldn't wait till, Monday morning. I'd take those out because the when I in the 70s when I grew up, a pack of cards was a quarter.
Order,
So I might take three bags of garbage out, and like, okay, I got three quarters. I'm going to go buy three packs of football cards, and we wait. And a bunch of my friends in the neighborhood, especially in the summertime, we did this when we were off from school. We would all wait and bring our packs and sit on somebody's front porch and open them up, and then have some fun, chew the stale gum, and then start trading them. And I ended up buying a case because there was 28 teams in the NFL at that time, so I had this case that opened up, which you're probably familiar with, and it had 28 slots in it. And I took out the old label maker and put name of each team, and that was when that's when we had fun, is when you completed a team. Hey, I just completed the Eagles, or hey, so but that was, and you traded with your buddies and just had a great time, and you used the checklist to know how many cards when you had a full team. And I think we got some of us got the full set in those years, but that was all the fun of it, though. It was the brass ring that you're always reaching for.
Exactly. And then again, the other thing I used to love sports magazines like Sport Magazine, Sports Illustrated, the Sporting News. And I didn't realize until I opened a couple of, I don't know what year it was, Sport Magazine. I opened up the back and they had all the ads. And it said, you can buy a complete set of 1973 Topps baseball, Topps football. I said, you can't. And again, everything started to make sense to me. Okay, these are sets of cards. And I was just fascinated for probably 2, 3 years about trying to own a set because I didn't really own a set because I was all missing a few cards here and there, so on and so forth. So again, as the 70s and the late 70s and the early 80s hit, then I became super active in trying to, complete a lot of these sets. And as the years and times ebbed and flowed, having disposable income, I decided to go for the run and put it together from 48 to 2015.
Yeah, that is totally amazing that you'd have that longevity of doing that. That's
It was
my
fun. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was a fun thing for me to go buy a wax box of cards, and go home that night. And at my little table there, I would open up the packs, and I would at that time I knew what I was doing, so I would start sorting, pre-sorting them, so on and so forth. I would study what they looked like back and forth, and try to put the set together, and then immediately put together a want list, and then go from there, type of situation. I was also fortunate in between 1990 and 92, I worked for a baseball card store near where I lived. It was a part-time job. I helped the gentleman who owned the business, but he couldn't pay me, so he paid me in cards, believe it or not. So I ended up with a lot of inventory of cards of all sports working for him. But it was fun for me because he had some incredible vintage cards in his store and incredible cards, and he actually helped me finish my 1965 top set back then with the few cards that I needed to finish it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a great point because that's a really good resource for a collector is your local card shops. We've got a handful of them here in the small town that I live in, and I know the gentleman of a few of them. They're always willing to help you out. Hey, what are you looking for? And hey, I don't have that here, but let me take a look around. You've been a great resource to me when I'm looking for something. You've been able to help me out on a bunch of things, to help me with some sets and get towards some of my goals. And so there's always some people that are in the know that there's always somebody that knows more than or has a
Yeah,
better
exactly.
connection to you. And that's a great thing. So what do you like about the local card dealers?
Well, develop a relationship with your local card dealer. Introduce yourself. I'm 99.9% sure they would love to help you out. Tell them what you're interested in. Say, I collect Pittsburgh Steeler cards. Can you give me a hand with them? So on and so forth. They'll probably come back and ask you, okay, what years are you going back? How many, what are you looking for? You're just stars. You want all the players in the year, so on and so forth. And he could probably give you some guidance with regards to where do you want to begin? Because I think it's overwhelming for somebody starting to collect today. There's so many different brands. There's been so many cards produced since 1990. It's not even funny. 6, 7, 10, 15, 20 different brands in 1 year. It's overwhelming. So you kind of have to narrow your focus. And let's use the example of being a team set collector. You could say to the dealer, well, I was born in 1993, so I'd like to get one team set of the Steelers each year from my birth year up. And then I'll decide afterwards if I go back anymore. And that's a very, very doable run. There's a
Right.
lot of different types of brands out there that you can collect, and for the most part, they'll be reasonably priced. And again, if you're interested in hitting the lottery, and you think the cards are the way to hit the lottery, they're not. Buy the lottery, don't buy, but buy the cards for fun and buy the cards for the appreciation of what you're looking at. And that's the history of the game and the history of the player that you're buying. To me, it's an incredible honor for any professional player or college player to have a card produced of them. And, I think that's the coolest thing about collecting cards is you're collecting all these different guys who played and all these people who, some are stars, some will never be stars. Some are one season, some, lasted 20 seasons, so on and so forth. So there's a lot you can do with the hobby if you, in my opinion, narrow your focus a little and be reasonable in your expectations as far as what and how you're going to collect. And the hobby shop to me is one of the best best areas to get into and go into. I could spend hours in a card shop just going through 5,000 count boxes and looking at the cards in there and picking out 10 cards, and they're probably going to be 10 cents each or a quarter each or whatever. And I know the card shop owner is not going to make the rent off of me, but at least he realizes he's helped me and I've helped him move some inventory, and he's helped me with my collection.
Yeah, I have one of the local card shops. I go down and I usually go to a seminar or a meeting, whether it's PFRA or something to do with football history, or maybe there's a former player that's going to be at an event. And what I try to do is been trying to get the cards of them. Like, for instance, we have a PFRA meeting coming up here in April, and I just found out that Mark Kelso is going to be there, former Buffalo
Okay.
Bill. And I met him last summer, but it was at the Pottsville celebration, so I couldn't
Right.
really get near him. He's from Pottsville, that's why he was there. But I'm going to go down to my card shop and tell Mike down there, hey Mike, I need to get a Kelso card or two and get him. I did this a few years ago when I met John Cole, but left tackle for the Steelers in the 70s. And I'll tell you what, John was so ecstatic that I handed a picture of him, on his card. He's like, wow. I go, I haven't seen one of these things in years. He even read the back of his own statistics and everything, and he enjoyed the card for a few minutes before he signed it, and had some great chit chat. So they're really honored when they have, it's a little monument of them, and when they sign it, most of them are more than happy to do it.
And especially the older players love being remembered by their fans and by the fans of the team. And again, it brings back a lot of memories because a lot of those guys, they had cards. They really didn't put it in perspective, when they were playing. And they say, gee, I got to hoard all the cards I got because I know 20 years from now I'm going to, sign them off or whatever. So it's very respectful of the player and of the hobby when guys like you and other people do that to a former player. And the player appreciates it, believe me. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, and this doesn't even have to be like mainstream player. John Cole was pretty well known. Kelso was pretty well known. They're playing Super Bowls. But we have a gentleman that comes. I've been looking for him the last couple of years because I bought his card and he hasn't been at this Western PA meeting the last couple of years. But Lou Piccone, who played for the Bills, and I, he's hilarious. But I keep bringing the card because I want him to sign it, and I know he would get a kick out of it because there's a guy that not many people remember or heard of, but this guy was an NFL player and played a few years on the Bills,
A story to that effect too is there was a player for the New York Giants. His name was Dan Goetsch. He basically had one card from the 1974 Topps set. And years ago, I used to have a little want ad in Sports Collector's Digest football want list filled 1948 to 1988. That was my standard little ad. So I got a letter from him one day, and he says, hi, do you have any cards of Dan Goetsch? And I look, and he signed his name as Dan Goetsch, and he said, I'll buy you as many as you have. So I think I had like two or three, and I put them in an envelope. I mailed it to him. I said, if you are Dan Goetsch, I said, I'm curious. Are you looking for, are you signing them or whatever, so on and so forth? And he wrote back to me, very nice letter. He says, I will buy any that you can find for me. And he said, I'm basically trying to corner the market on my cards. He said, we also autograph them and send them out. I said, okay, I get it. And he was on my hunt list. And if I was at a card show, I go into the 1974 boxes or whatever and pick out all that he had, and I would basically sell it to him. And along that same line too, for 1 year, actually 2 years, I sent cards to the Atlanta Falcons of their players so that they could use them to send out for autographs, and they would pay me for that. And then I would ask if I could get a few players signed autograph cards, but I have all my cards signed to Bob. I have them personalized, so they realize I'm not going to resell them, and they appreciated that. But I shipped the Falcons a lot of cards for 2 years when I was back in Connecticut. I mean, I really pumped out a lot of cards to them, and they appreciated it. And they used them. I think they had a lot of charity events there that they would give out the cards, more personal than printing a photo out for the event or whatever.
Now, there's probably some young person out there that has some Falcons cards, and now they can, if
Right.
they're listening, they're
Yeah.
saying, "Hey, well, this came from Bob, who, who's talking on there to go through, whoever my favorite Falcon player was that gave it to me." That's pretty cool. That's a real cool story.
That popped in my head when I was thinking about Dan Gordon,
Yeah, right.
and Dan actually became a legend in the hobby because that his card, which was one time considered a common, became a very valuable card because he basically owned most of them, and sadly he passed a year or two ago, so the market has freed up for his cards again for the 74 cent, but
Now,
whatever.
okay, so we've talked about local card shops. We talked about buying brand new cards, that you can go whether your card shop, you can, online is big now.
Right.
The big box stores have a different set than what you get at the card shop, But there's also, I mean, I know a lot of towns, and my town has it, local card shows. Like every couple months, we'll have a card show here, and I'm sure it's all around the country. What can people do at card shows to get enjoyment out of card collecting?
Well, go to a card show with a plan. I always tell a collector, bring your want list there. Engage the dealer that you ask immediately, do you have any football cards? Some dealers might say, I'm sorry, I only deal in baseball or another sport. But I'm sure the dealers there will say to you, yeah, I have some football cards. What are you looking for? Tell them exactly what you're looking for and tell them I would like to look at them, so on and so forth. And you'd be surprised what you might find. You might find a couple older cards, or you might find some cards I never even knew existed. And you'll pick them up and you have a great addition to your collection. If you do go to the National Sports Collectors Convention, and I tell this to anyone who has never been to a big show, be prepared to be completely overwhelmed with the amount of tables, the amount of people, and it's just an incredible experience to go to a national and try to shop there and pick up cards, so on and so forth. It's mind-boggling to go there. I've been to many, many nationals over the years, and I'm at the point now it's a big deal for me to walk around for 6, 7 hours to try to find cards type of thing, and it's getting tougher as far as I'm concerned to try to do a show, go to a show like that and be very active with it. So I tend to just go to the dealers I know, talk to people I know, so on and so forth. But for beginning collectors, you get an opportunity to go to a national, just go. You'll never regret it. You'll say, this is an incredible show. I've never seen anything in my life like it in my life. And you'll be sold on going to shows, even if it's a small show or a big show, depending on what it is.
I'm sure. I mean, I know our local show. It's one of our card shop sponsors, and I think he has it like every 2 months. And it's a combination. It's all cards, all sports cards. I don't think they have like the Pokemon and stuff in there, but it's all, the hockey, baseball, football, basketball. But I find that I have problems. And he started off, a couple years ago, he was only having like 20 tables, and it's a fairly decent sized venue. He's totally sold out, because I went down last fall to, I said, I'd like got a table. I said, maybe I'll just put some books out and just meet people and, just talk to people that people like sports history. That's what I like, and just get a chance to talk with people. I couldn't even get a table, and he's got a waiting list. Does that seem to be the trend around the country, that the sports card shows are becoming more and more popular?
They're more popular, and as an aside, a lot of sports dealers mix them with the Pokemon, with the Funko Pop types of dealers, and that is good and bad in my opinion. I'm not big on it anymore for the simple reason there are more Pokemon dealers, and it takes away from the sports card dealers. And a lot of sports card collectors say, well, that's going to be mostly a Pokemon show. There's only going to be 10 sports card dealers. I'm not going to go to the show. I'm not going to find what I want. So if your local show is still a true sports type of collectible show, I urge everyone to support them and go there and buy from those dealers, because that's what we need more of, the sports only shows, rather than the mixture of the phenomenon of Pokemon, which reminds me of the phenomenon of Beanie Babies years ago, of Pogs, of every other type of trend that was there. Pokemon seems to be sticking longer than before, but at some point, I think some people may stop buying them, and I don't, the fad might fade a little, to say the least. But again, a show, the one thing I like so much about a show, and I've been going and dealing, doing shows since the 19, late 1970s. I set up as a dealer in the early 80s, that there's so many different things you can look at. There's so many different dealers, so many different, different types of product that are there. And it's just amazing. You can get everybody in one hall, and you can walk from one table to another table to another table. You can buy something from each table, and you leave and you say, wow, it was Christmas in July here that I got all this stuff and all stuff that I needed for my collection type of thing. So.
Yeah, and it's great at these shows. I mean, one thing I love your piece of advice of having going in with a list in your hand
Right.
and do it, because I know me, I'm like that, dog that sees a squirrel and I'm off on another beaten path. I see something shiny and hey, I gotta have that. What's that card? So I
Yeah.
gotta stay focused. And you can spend a lot of money if you really
Right.
let yourself go in there. And I've done that a few times. So, but
That's
I
what
get,
I
I
would say.
like the list thing.
Going to a show, have a plan. What do you want? What are you looking for? I'm looking for 1988 Tops, whatever. Okay, you go with that in mind. Have a plan when you're going.
Yeah, that's a great idea. But the other thing I'd like to say about shows is if you go in there with that plan, you're looking for a specific card or cards from a set. And I'll go to the first dealer and ask him. He may have some, but he may say, "You know what? I don't have any of those with me, but I think, Joe, that's
Right.
three tables down, I'm pretty sure he brought some, whatever these, 77 tops or whatever." And they refer each other because they know each other. They go to shows together. They're probably trading and wheeling and dealing, when they're in their own shops
Well,
or however they do.
that's the camaraderie of the hobby, and that's the camaraderie of the hobby that I knew back in the 1980s, where I was more than happy to help somebody across, a dealer across the hall. I knew he had the stuff. Go there and tell him Bob sent you. And I had numerous dealers say over the years, Bob has it at his table. Go over and there. Depending on the show, it's still there, but I think in some shows now, it's not as prevalent as it used to be. So I know, and I've done a couple of big shows over the past few years down here, and there wasn't, the camaraderie was questionable, if you ask me. So again, though, I would never, if I knew somebody else had something and I didn't have it, I would say to the person, walk over there, see so and so, and they'll help you out with it. That's what it's all about. That's why we are a hobby. We're not a business. I think that's the way you got to look at it. We're a hobby. And for the hobby to survive, hobbyists have to help hobbyists. That's the key.
Yeah. Another, I mean, there's other avenues to, if, especially if you're collecting older cards, somebody's having a rummage sale or, a swap meets, we'll have them. Or, like I've told folks, I have a local consignment shop just down the street that has a lot of hobby stuff, from model trains to plastic models you glue together, but comic books, but they also have section with trading cards or sports cards. And you can go in there and buy them very affordably to do that. Now, what should people be looking for when they're going into these, places where they're not maybe not organized by dates and there's not an expert on site? What should they be looking for?
Well, I think what they should be looking for, if they see a big box of cards and the box of cards say, a quarter each or whatever, take a chance and talk to the proprietor or the person working there. Can I get a better deal if I buy the entire box of cards? And they may say, oh, sure, we want to get rid of them. Give us, $10 or $20 for the box type of thing, and we'll sell it to you. And then you get home and you sort it and say, wow, I got this, I got this, I got trading material. I got cards from my collection, so on and so forth. And it helps them out because they free up space to put something else out in their store. And it helps you out because you're getting cards at a discounted rate. And you can find some, a hidden gem, let's say, or many cards for your collection type of thing, or a lot of trading material with people you trade with. So that's my advice with that. I've done that many, many times. The running joke is back in the 80s when football cards weren't really that popular. I would go to a show and I would ask dealers if they had any football cards. And to them, they didn't want to advertise it. They would go in the back of the table and it was the infamous cheese box that would come out full with football cards. So I said, well, how much would you like for the box? And the tradition back then was it was a $5 cheese box. That was the running joke. So the dealer would say, well, what do you want to give me for it? I said, well, you take $5. He said, sold. Give me the $5. And I'd have my cheese box and I'd be walking around. And inevitably, back in the 80s, I would pick up at least one cheese box every show. And it was a running joke. I had like 15, 20 cheese boxes packed with cards all the time. And there was stuff that I would be going through from the shows. Sometimes I hit some gems, and sometimes it was just a box of commons, which was fine with me. I had the material, I had the inventory, so.
Yeah, because like you alluded to earlier, not only do you get an image of a player, which gives you a little bit of a connection to them, because it's usually an image that, it's not popular. It's not like it was on Sports Illustrated or anything like that.
Right,
It's
right.
some usually unique to Topps or, Bowman or whoever was, doing the images at the time. But on the back, I know I like the 1970s, not only reading the stats, baseball cards are more stats. A football lineman doesn't have a whole lot of stats
Right.
other than his career. But in the 70s, Topps used to have like those little cartoons. They would draw, like somebody would draw, they're pretty talented artists, and then they'd have like a fun fact about
Right.
the player. And those were always a good time to look at. And sometimes you get a chuckle out of them. Sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, this guy did that. So there's other value to the cards of just education and to enjoy.
Right, exactly. And again, I always tell collectors, read the back of the card. Don't be just, mesmerized by the front picture. Read the back of the card. See what information you can get, or you might learn more about the player itself. I mean, today we're in a info age where, we're on the internet looking up information all the time. But take a step back, take an older card, look at the back of it, study it, see what it says, read what they're talking about with the player. You'll be very surprised with what you read and what you see in a lot of those players. It's great history. It's the history of the game.
Right. Now, we talked a little bit before we came on, and you had some tips on maybe display and storage of your treasures
Yeah.
once you bring them home. So maybe you could show some of that.
The one thing I like to show is if you put a set together, you can buy nine pocket sheets for the set. And put all your cards of the set into the sheets and display it single card so you can see the back of the card and then the front of the card at the same time. And the nine pocket sheets are not that expensive. You can get them you can find them at shows. You can find it in retail outlets. You can find it at card shops, have them at the same time. And what I did is I enjoyed these football only, where it says football collecting. These were prevalent back in the 1990s as far as binders, but they have binders like this. So this preserves your card well and allows you to look through your set and read both the front and the back of the card, and does preserve the cards very well. I won't lie. I used to, back in the 60s, paste the card in a scrapbook. One side of the card up, and then I would have a double of the card. I would paste it the other side up so I could see both sides at the same time, because sheets were not around until roughly the 1970s. So there was no other way of doing it, and we would put them in photo albums where we'd have the little corner pieces we could stick in, and then we could pull it out and try to look in the back. But I did paste a bunch of Philadelphia football cards in an album. Years ago, the scrapbook album, and then I finally got some box shoe boxes, and I started putting them in the shoe boxes, and then I saw it was easier for me to just take them out and look at them, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I know probably some of the things that I did when I was a kid, that probably are not good for card preservation. We would stick
Right.
a rubber band around,
Yeah.
the paper. That's probably not a good idea for
Yeah, it's
any
not.
treasure.
You don't want to do that. And back then, probably you and I know I did. I'm sure you might have done it too. Taking the checklist for the cards and you would check them to find out which cards you had, and that's forbidden today. If you have a checklist, you keep it pristine. You don't, you know, you just, you know, it's just a checklist. You don't want to use it as a checklist and actually mark it type of thing. But that's
Yeah,
another.
probably not a good idea to write on unless it's a former NFL player or coach. It's putting
Right.
his signature on it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I got plenty of cards that got pen marks on them. I got plenty of cards that have people's names on them, so on and so forth. But to me, that they represent even more history of the game, because here is somebody who was a collector at the time decided to initial or to personalize their collection to know that it was their card for their collection.
I agree. That's a great way to ruin a card set. I have the top super cards from 1969 series, which are oversized cards. They're big, and you know there's a 35 card set, and I think 17 of those players are now in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and one of them's Joe Namath. My Joe Namath one, he was a very popular player when he played, has a pinhole from somebody sticking a pin. It's like right in his forehead. They stuck it on there, but that's the card I got because Namaths are hard to get in that set. And that's what I have right now. But you know somebody enjoyed that card.
It was popular in the day too. You would tape the card on your wall so you could look at it that way. So, you know, a lot of cards have tape marks. Why do they have tape marks? As they were taped on the wall in your in the kid's room to see it, type of thing. So.
Funny story. I told you about Lou Piccone, and he's quite the character. I was joking with him. We were talking about his trading cards and everything, and I told him, I said, you know what? I said, you know how I had your card, Lou? And he's like, where was I? It was probably like a place of honor. I said, that was the one I put my bike spokes to make it sound like. And he called. I goes, I hope you busted every spoke in there and went flying over the handlebars.
And that was very popular. That's why you know
Right.
you have a flip through your bicycle wheel. So,
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we're getting low on time here, but what would, I mean, would you have any passing last tips for that new collector of how to enjoy your
yeah,
sets?
the biggest thing I could tell a new collector, collect what you like. If it's a team, if it's a player, if it's a birth year set, or you want to try to make a run of sets, just stick with that to start off with. You could always branch out to a lot of different things, but you'll get so much more fulfillment in the hobby. Just focus on something and move forward with that. And it's a great sense of accomplishment once you complete it.
All right. And before we let you go, you have some great assets yourself. You have a magazine, you have a podcast that's really dedicated to this hobby. And maybe you could share with folks what that is and
Yeah.
what they could expect from your products.
Gridiron Greats Magazine is a quarterly publication on the history and memorabilia of football. Check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. And my co-host Joe Squires and I have a podcast. We have two shows every month. We try to interview collectors and their collections. And there's so many great collections out there. It's unbelievable. I've been so honored over the years to see some of the greatest football card and memorabilia collections in the country. It's great.
All
And
right.
we're on the
Well,
Sports History Network also, like you are. So.
all right. Well, Bob, we really appreciate you taking some time and do that. We're gonna tap into you here as we again as we go through this series to help collectors and we're gonna get into more advanced collecting things here too. But we're really trying to help that new collector get into the hobby and enjoy the sport we love and the preservation of history. And we thank you for helping us.
And thanks for starting this, Darren. It's a great move for our hobby, and I hope where our hobby becomes re-energized with a lot of new collectors enjoying the game. Thanks for having me on.
We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're gonna have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history.
Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones, too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.